Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. As we segue from the beautiful music of Mashita Lee. Well, that was chakra psychology, actually. That's quite a thing. It brings to mind a couple of experiences I had over the last couple of days that I thought would be very interesting as an introduction to what we're talking about today. Today we are talking about transforming yourself. You know what transformers are? It's when you plug it into the wall and it's this big thing so that you can play small devices. You're transforming energy. You're making energy go from one thing to another. Transformational process when you're trying to get yourself from being one kind of person to another kind of person. I have in the studio with me two people who are Gestalt therapists, well-known Gestalt therapists, Shelly Oren King, and Gladys Santapau, who's been with us many times before. We're going to be talking with them in a little bit. Let me tell you two stories, two very important stories about transformation. I want to tell you, the first one is a football story. Of all things, a football story, would you believe? This past Sunday, there's a football game, and the New York Giants, of all people, are playing some other team. And but at the beginning of the game, there's this man whose name is Feely, would you believe? F-E-E-L-Y is his last name. I don't know his first name. And he's a kicker, and he gets this award. He gets the award for having attended the most number of football games of anybody alive today. Something like that. Attended and shown up and playing in the game. Well, that's, you know, it's like, remember when you went to school and you had the perfect attendance certificate? Where, you know, you got some kind of credit, like Dean's List for that. I got one once. Perfect attendance. Well, anyway, it was noteworthy, and they were going to put him in the Hall of Records. And as a result of that, he had invited his family and his friends to attend. Now, what is this important? Why is this related to transformation? Listen in, friends. Quite an amazing thing happened. At the end of the game, this man who kicks field goals worth 3 points with an incredible accuracy is confronted with a chance to win the game by kicking a field goal. And he gets up there. And he misses. And nobody could figure out why he misses. And, of course, not only does he miss for the football audience, but his family is there and his friends are there, all giving him this celebration for having achieved this perfect attendance record. And then he gets up, and there's another chance. They go into overtime, and there's a second chance for him to kick the field goal, and he misses again. Now he's sitting down in deep, deep shame. He's sitting on the bench, and they show you, and all of his teammates are going over and saying, "It's okay, don't worry about it, Feely. You're going to get past it. It's great. Don't worry about it," even though they're losing the game because of him. And then he gets a third opportunity. Nobody ever misses three field goals. Yep, he misses a third one. And that's it. And now they're talking about it. And if you pick up a newspaper on Monday's newspaper, you'll see it on the sports pages. Feely misses three field goals. Amazing. But a question happens here. How did he miss those three? What happened to him? What nobody talks about is the fact that he had invited his entire family and friends to attend the game. And that he was emotionally changed. Something transformed him so that he would fail. I think that's a kind of a remarkable story. I observed it. I watched it going on. And I think that that says something to us. Why would celebration of something which is nothing, you know, which is you've attended the most games in football, why would that have made you fail three times in a row to a point of the most amazing humiliation? In fact, not only was that, but a few seconds later, the opponent's field goal kicker gets up and kicks a field goal successfully and wins the game. So it was another kicker who wins. Of course, all the news you're going to read about is about how he missed three field goals. The news you don't read about is my perception and the perception of my two guests here, which is that there is something in the human mind which goes wacky sometimes, and it changes things. This is Armand DeMille with you with the sports report. Now let me give you another story, and this is another story of this past Sunday. It was Sunday, wasn't it? Same day, no Saturday. Friday. Same weekend. Mind you, Thanksgiving weekend, you know, passes. And here, one of my dear friends and associates, his mother dies. So I hear there's a funeral right near where I live at the famous Joseph Campbell home, funeral home, or Frank Campbell funeral home, which is quite an extraordinary place, you know, and I go to the funeral and I go there and there's an open casket. Now I'm not used to, I know open caskets for Italians, you know, if you have open caskets, you go over, you kiss them, you got the waxy body sitting in there, you touch them, you say goodbye to whoever's in the caskets. I know Jews don't do that in general. They don't have open caskets, but this is a Jewish family with an open casket, and she's sitting there in the casket with the casket open. This is my friend's mom. And nobody goes over. But instead, what they do is they are the most warm, loving, big family, like 150 people greeting each other, welcoming each other, being so kind and polite to each other and nice to each other. And I see great warmth and I think, oh, my friend comes from a really warm family. But still nobody goes to the casket. So what goes on is they do this, they get up and each one of the kids talk about grandma and how she was, or ma, and how she was and what a wonderful lady. But then my friend gets up, my associate gets up, and a piece of magic happened, which I want to bring to you today. This is a man who sings, or is learning singing. He recently lost his wife. She died to cancer. He got remarried. His mom dies. He gets up and he talks about himself. And he talks about himself and he talks about what a rebel he's always been and how his mother has always accepted him through his rebelliousness. And then he says at the end of it, because he's a very subtle kind of guy, and he says, I want to sing a song I wrote to my mother. And there he goes off in a corner to sit where you can't even see him. And he gets his guitar and he's now going to sing the song. Now, here I am sitting in the pews with all the other people at the funeral parlor. And I can't even see this man. This is James. And James is singing there and he's there and he's going to sing this song. And James gets up there and this is, I tell you people, he's this remarkable man who I've known all these years. He's just like amazing. He lives he walks his talk. He feels. And James gets up and he's going to now play this guitar song to his mother, who is dead. And he gets up there and he starts to sing. And I tell you, his voice is terrible. I know you're going to hear this, James. You sound, when I was a kid, I first heard some pretty terrible people singing. And I remember saying to myself, how could a voice like that ever succeed? And they succeeded well. Well, James's voice was just a voice that cracks and has no sense of tone. And he gets up there and he sings. And he sings a terrible song that might have been like Muhammad Ali might have written it. You know, it rhymes. And he says, oh, mother, I miss you, and you and the nicest person I ever met. And he's playing his guitar. And the audience starts looking at each other and going, you know, what's this going to be? A flaky song going on. That weird kid James, right? And he sings again and he says, you know, when I was away, you were always there for me. And he sings this terrible thing again. But something's beginning to happen. I love James. So I focused all of my attention on James across the heads of many people who I couldn't even see. I couldn't see these people. I couldn't see James for sure. And I'm looking over the heads and I'm sending him all the love I can anyway. But he doesn't need my love because James is in his own world. He is feeling this. And all of these people who are so polite and kind and didn't look at the casket, they're kind of now making a couple of smirks, you know, but it's okay. We love him anyway. And then James sings this line, something like the following. And he sings, oh, mother, I'm going to miss you. Something like that. I don't remember. Thank you for being my mom. That was it. My mother or mom? My mom. Thank you for being my mom. That's all he sings. And he's strumming his guitar and he's playing the chords and he sings it. But it's as if a coyote or a wolf had entered his body. And all of a sudden, James is singing this in this terrible voice. He's singing, thank you for being my mom. And you hear this terrible voice and strumming the guitar. And then he sings it again. He says, thank you for being my mom. And all of a sudden, this voice is filling this place, the Frank Campbell Funeral Home. And he strums the guitar again without the chords, and he says, "Thank you for being my mom." And something happens. Then he puts down the guitar, and straight from his heart, he sings it two more times. He says, in the loudest, wailing, wolf-like voice you ever heard, "Thank you for being my mom." And one more time, and just as he's about to start the last time, it was like an egg broke. And out of everybody's eyes, tears came forth like the yolk out of an egg, and they were flooded. And everybody burst into tears. And it was like amazing, amazing, amazing. He cracked through all of the layers with his honesty and his love. It was exquisite. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. Truth will do that to you. I turn now to my two guests here in the studio, Shelley Orne King and Gladys Santapau. Shelley, how do you like my story?
I love it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome to BAI.
Thank you, Armand.
Boy, if you were there, you were transformed.
I can well imagine. Brought tears to my eyes just now.
Yeah. They brought tears to your eyes. Uh-huh. Wow, I wonder if we brought tears to anybody else's eyes. Thank you for being my mom. And it's sometimes a coyote, I think, does enter a body and howl. But what did it? What made it work? What was it?
In my experience just now, I was thinking about my own son.
What were you thinking about?
That's a little hard. We're dealing with some of that. He's adopted, so we're beginning to deal with what it means to be a mom. And this was very personal to me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for being my mom. A message to you also.
Yeah.
Hey, Gladys, going through the transformation process, going through it, what is this about layers? What happens? Because here we broke layers, both in the baseball game and the football game. A layer was broken to the negative, or maybe to the positive, I'm not sure. Maybe missing those three field goals was the best thing that Mr. Feely, with a name like Feely, could have ever done. You know, maybe he needed to miss those three.
Can be an opportunity for growth.
So what do you think? What do you think happens at moments like this?
Well, what happens is that people develop into roles in life. So for him, it's possible that he...
Which is the he we're talking about?
What's his name? Feely?
Feely.
Feely.
Feely, okay. As in touchy feely.
Okay.
His first name wasn't touchy, but it might have been.
So this is how I see it. He seemed to have developed this fixed role in that I am good, I am successful, I am a really good player, and I want to show everyone in the world how good I am. And so he invites his entire family and his friends, and he's attached to this idea that he is really great. And then something happens. He misses. And he misses, and he misses, as you said, Armand. And at that moment, he's faced with this reality that he's missing, and it's not matching with his idea that he's going to get it right, and that's going to prove that he is this spectacular player and this great person.
Yes, you know, even if we're not talking about him, we have roles. We have beliefs about ourselves is what you're saying.
Exactly.
You're saying that people live roles. They have roles that they believe about themselves. How would you know what these different roles are? Shelley, what defines, how does somebody know if they're living a role as opposed to going down to their core self, their real self? How would you know what your role is? How do you know what's real and what's not real?
Part of it has to do with whether or not you're living a life that you're satisfied with. And if your life feels two-dimensional and you don't feel like you have a lot of aliveness in your life, but you want aliveness, then you kind of feel this sense of dissatisfaction.
Okay, let's talk about aliveness for a moment. I've known people on their deathbeds who feel a lot of deadness, and they're happy folks. So is aliveness just about having energy? Is that what it's about? Is that the definition of mental health, being energetic? Because then we have manic people. They must be very mentally healthy.
No, what I would say is that we can meet the moment with appropriateness, in the sense that, no, it's not about always being happy, but it's about having resiliency. It's about kind of meeting the bumps in the road and being able to get over them. But also to have energy in your life and to have a sense of fullness and wholeness.
Okay, now you're going back to this energy again.
Right.
So I want to get this, because a lot of people define mental health as having energy, but I know a lot of crazy people who have lots of energy. So you're saying energy more than once. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's all about?
Well, what I believe is that it's not always about having... When you speak about energy, I'm thinking of somebody who has, you know, undue amount of energy that they can't handle. I'm talking about energy for a particular moment in a particular time. Sometimes it's appropriate to have quiet energy. But what we want to be able to is kind of go and flow in our lives to what's appropriate in the moment, and to be able to be more in the moment and be more authentic to what's really happening in front of you, versus having to produce moments to feel energy. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I could go along with that. I understand that completely. Mental health is being happy with yourself, being satisfied with yourself on some level, and being happy with what you do and feeling okay. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel okay about your life, maybe you're struggling through something. What if you just went through New Orleans? I mean, you're not going to be too happy about your life, but you go through it.
Right. They're natural disasters where people are going to feel down and appropriately sad. And we went through 9/11. You know, we're still struggling with the you know, onslaught of that in our city. But it's not about that. It's that we are able to meet those life crises in a way that we have some resiliency, that we can find what's precious and good about us, that we can meet these things.
So it doesn't sound like it's very wise to go through life very afraid, very scared, very trepidatious. You like that? Trepidatious, isn't that a good adverb? Very, you know, trying to go through life like you're worried about things all the time, and worried and scared and angry is another way. These are kind of like the negative side of it. That's an unhappy way to be. And we're saying this is an unhappy way to be. We're saying if you spend your time being jealous all the time or feeling inadequate, we call that unhappy. Mm-hmm. All right? Do we get an agreement? Do we think that this is unhappy?
Yes, and I also want to add that it's about being flexible with what you may experience at different times. At one moment, it's being okay with your feelings. At this moment, I'm happy. At this moment, I'm sad. At this moment, I am scared. At this moment, I am nervous. And it's just allowing that flexibility to feel these different feelings, and rather than being attached to just one set of feelings, always happy or always afraid. It's about just having the flexibility of going through the different feelings.
So it's okay to be sometimes jealous, sometimes angry, sometimes sad, sometimes nervous, and sometimes panicky, and that's the way I spend my life?
Yes, that's life. That's
well,
what
about
happens.
Good things? I think you got a point there, that you got to have the flexibility to dip into a sad or negative feeling, but it's a dip. It's a dip. I mean, you could grieve somebody who dies. You know, your mother dies, your father dies. I'll go back to James for a minute. You know, anybody who knows James knows that James is going to be actively grieving. And he's such a beauty at the way he does it, that he does it clearly, absolutely clearly. He doesn't take a day off from going to work. He says, what's the worst that's going to happen is I'm going to feel. You know, and he shows his feelings and he stays in touch, and he'll be sad and he'll be happy at the same time. The bottom line is defaulting to a joyous life. If you default to a happy life, you probably have the right idea. If you default to a negative life, then we're probably dealing with what my two guests have described as the roles that people eat. No, the roles that people play. What role are you playing? I'm a Bialy. Okay, so if you're going to play these different roles and you can't get underneath, what does that mean? What is it when you don't have your roles anymore? What if you're not pleasing people? What if you're not in charge of people? What if you're not kicking field goals? What sits underneath that?
Well, there's often a lot of anxiety and misgivings about who you are and loss of identity, and you feel like you're not in your own skin anymore. And it can cause you to begin to feel very confused. So what we try to do is help people to have a flow to feel all their feelings. But often what happens when they get to that point, they get to a point called confusion. And that's not a comfortable place to be. But we believe that it's a very important thing to stay with your confusion in order to experience that as well, because there's really a deeper place that you can go that can help you move toward more transformational change.
Well, that's quite beautiful, Shelley. What you mean is if you let go of your roles, if you're not being, you know, the perfect mom, the perfect child, the perfect parent, and you're not being perfection, you're going to find yourself not knowing who you are. And therein lays a confusion. Then the mind goes fetching, well, if I'm not all these things, who am I and what am I? A lot of people would get you to go answer that right away. Well, then you're a soldier. You belong in Iraq. And then you're a salesperson and you should sell cars. And instead, what you're saying is part of what you consider to be a growth process, a process where people could find themselves, is to accept that the confusion is a natural state of being when you dissolve the layers of your artificial psyche.
Yes. When we live sometimes in the polarity of our existence, and there were either or, and we begin to not be an or but an and, then we do get very, very confused, because we live in a very Western society that is a very, you know, either or, one in ten existence. But we want to get people to be able to realize that there's so many shades of gray in between, and that we're going to be feeling all of that, and all of that is real. We have so many parts to ourselves, and most of our life we spend disowning this precious, good material. There might even be things that we hate about ourselves. Some of the things that we hate about ourselves can be some of the best things that can happen to us, the best learning points.
We're talking to Shelley Oren King, who's the executive director of the Gestalt Center here in New York, psychotherapist in private practice, but also, you know, the head of this institute. But, you know, Shelley, one of the things I know about you is you work with women who are abused, and you've helping people who are survivors of abuse, and you have an expertise in working with that. How does this work of the layers and going through the layers help people who are survivors of abuse? And when we talk about survivors of abuse, do we mean physical abuse, sexual abuse? What kind of abuse?
All sorts. Abuse, neglect, and trauma. I co-founded a program called Women in Search of Healing. And in that program, we work with all sorts of women who've had experiences that are very challenging to who they are and how they view themselves. And often, women who've gone through these experiences end up with a fixed role of victimization. And we understand why that happens, because when you've been abused, you feel like a victim. The goal of WISH has always been to help them to move past that, you know, two-dimensional role of being either a victim or being an abuser, and to begin to be a thriver, begin to see that they can take care of themselves, that they can stand up to authority, that they can, you know, be in their own skin and be a happy person. And it's a wonderful transformational experience for them. They can walk out of the group and really begin to not be so isolated in their life, because many abuse victims feel very isolated.
They feel isolated. What do they do in their isolation? If you're an abuse victim, you blame yourself. You feel a lot of shame. What else do you feel?
You often begin to sabotage yourself in your relationships with people. You might be sabotaging yourself.
What does that mean, sabotage yourself? Does it mean blow yourself up?
Well, choosing people who, again, might victimize you, people who don't treat you with or honor you and respect you.
So we want them to be able to see that there are other people out there, and that's what happens is they begin to develop a new lens that they look through, that they don't have to be victims anymore.
Well, how do you develop a lens like that when you've only seen yourself as somebody who is unworthy, who is worthy of all this abuse? How do you see? You have somebody like you saying, yeah, you're a good person?
It's experiential, the kind of work that we do. We provide experiences where they can go back to a time when they weren't abused.
And so in order to do that, they have to go through the time when they were abused.
They do that as well.
Okay, so you're saying somebody who was abused, this is different than a lot of trauma theory. You're saying that somebody who was abused, you believe, has to go back to relive the actual abuse itself.
What happens is that things are happening in their day-to-day life now that might even mirror some of that old abuse. So often we use that window going into what's happening in their situations right now, and that often begins to bring up those old feelings.
And when you bring up those feelings, when now, let's say you had somebody who was beaten as a child,
right,
and now they're being abused by their boss at work, and you go in through the window of the abuse of the boss at work, mm-hmm, and you have a person who's living a very sheltered, dysfunctional life, and you're working with them, and here you are, they've got Shelley herself, they've got, you know, the head of the institute is helping them out, and you take them through it, and they open the window, and they say, kind of, you know, it brings back the memories of childhood, you know, it brings it back. Now they're feeling this. How far into that do they have to go? I mean,
it depends on where they are and what kind of supports that they're feeling. What I can do is to begin to show them that I'm a witness now. I'm a witness. I'm a safe witness. I'm somebody who's there supporting them. They're not alone.
Well, will they be allowed to feel the feelings they weren't allowed to feel then?
Yes.
I think that's the clue.
Yes.
And that means they could be screaming and yelling and hollering.
Absolutely. And they're doing it now with other supports, not just me, but other women who are in the group.
But what if it's not a group? What if it's individual?
Individual can happen, but they can feel all the intensity of the feelings that they had back then, yes.
Now, doesn't it scare you to see somebody going through such a torment, such a horror?
Actually, no. I actually feel that it's an honor to be in that experience with them. And I feel that it's my work with them that I feel trust in them that they can get to that good stuff and then come out the other end feeling much more whole and able to take care of themselves. So for me, it's an honor.
We're talking with the Honorable Shelley Oren King, Executive Director of the Gestalt Center, psychotherapist in private practice, and we're also talking with Gladys Santapau, who's also a Gestalt therapist. We're talking about transformation through reliving and identifying some of the feelings from the past. We've got to take a short break. Let's lighten it up a little bit because this is amazing stuff. We had a couple of guests the other day.
About this room is the two parrots and the on-air sign, which lights up when all the machines turn on. I like all the pictures that are painted around here, and the clocks and the rugs, and I like the gong and all the microphones, and it's only an abyss sign, and anyway, what does it mean?
I like the mirror, that also the clock. I actually like that wall, that it's like styrofoam. It's pretty cool. And the rugs on the walls, that's cool. And the gong, that's just really awesome. Yeah.
Posit this, mind, Armand, DeMille, City, York, New, A, B, I, W, mind, this.
This is the Positive Mind with Armand DeMille, WBAI in New York City.
Thank you.
a little Mozart. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM, and a couple of children who are helping us out with our identity. Carl and Grace, thank you very much for your giving us a recording. Creative programming and some stories to tell you. And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind and my special guests who are here talking about Gestalt, G-E-S-T-A-L-T, therapy and the Gestalt approach to life. I've been someone who's always enjoyed the Gestalt approach because of the basic idea behind it. Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, Gestalt assumes... Sorry, that was engineering. Hey, listen, friends. Gestalt approach. Gestalt means the whole is bigger than the sum of all its parts. I think that's originally what the concept is. The concept is, you know, if you look at yourself and you see yourself sometimes in your dysfunctional little parts, you know, like how's my relationship, right? How's my sex life? How's my job? How's my kids? How's my mother? How's my neighbors? How are my friends? You take each of these things and you look at them individually and you can feel a lot of grief over them. Or you can take them separately and feel a lot of joy. You can say, oh, I'm good because I got money. I'm good because I have two cars. I'm good because I have children going to a private school. These, all of them, are fraught with conflict. Because at any point, you could kind of fall apart. You look at yourself and you say, if one of them break down, you break down. And that's because you don't have the totality. You don't have the whole picture. What we're looking at today is two scientists, two specialists, two psychotherapists who believe that there is a whole that is generated and that if you can get a picture of this entire being, this total self, that if any one part breaks down, you feel fine. You feel fine. You'll be able to get through it. You know, like I said about James, if James's mom dies, James is going to get through that. It's not the end of the world. You know, some of you feel like you can't live without your mate. Don't you think that if your mate died, you may as well just chalk it up? Some of you feel that way. Well, that could be true. Maybe this level of joy and love that you have right now may never be repeated, but you're going to get by. You're going to get through. There's a lot more of you to spread around this world. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're getting towards the end of our shows, you know, the yearly shows, and I do this as I get down towards the holiday seasons in December, and as we're about to turn a new year, I want you all to consider how you can be the beginning of a process of shedding some old skin and finding something about your core. Now, we're going to talk about the core. It was interesting. We were talking about the core, and we thought about, oh, maybe it's like peeling away an onion. You peel away at the onion, and you get away at the outer layers. And then finally you get to the core of the onion. Well, I don't like the core of onions. Do you? So then we thought about, well, how about a cauliflower? And I like that. I like the cauliflower idea. Because as you peel away the layers, you kind of... Oh, that's right. Not cauliflowers. Cauliflowers, you can peel away the layers, too. Is there a heart of an artichoke? Right, there is. But if you... In the artichoke... You enjoy every outer layer. You enjoy it. The way that people do it is they have a good time. In doing a therapeutic process where you're discovering yourself, one of the things you want to do is peel away the layers and enjoy them as you're doing it. If it's too heavy, too difficult, too painful, too rough, I don't think you're ever going to get to the core. You know, I don't think so. So I mean, what do you think, Shelley? You're a playful kind of person. Do you think it's all about pain?
Well, I don't I hate to say it, but I think that you really do need to have some less allergicness to pain in order to grow. I think it's part of the process.
Okay, so one is being allergic to pain, and the other is being willing to accept pain, but pain is a part of a joyful process.
Yes, and some of the pain that we fear is much less than the pain that we actually experience. And we all,
wait, say that again. Some of the pain we fear is much less. It's like your tunnel, you know, that you go through.
Exactly. Actually, we have different experiences, and in through the different experiences that we have, it's like going through a tunnel. And it's a little dark at the beginning, and you're a little afraid, and you think, well, I might leave, or I might go in. I'm not sure if I want to go in. But in this process, if you really want to face yourself and change, you go through the tunnel. And as you keep going deeper and deeper, it gets darker and scarier. But then something amazing happens as you keep going deeper. Then, as they say, you see light at the end of the tunnel. That expression comes from basically from that thought that as you go deeper and deeper, something changed, because in life, nothing is permanent. Everything is subject to change, and we fluctuate from, you know, light, day, pain, joy, night and day.
If, as you go through this, you see things that are scary, like you said. You know, you see parts of yourself that are scary, and if you see parts of yourself that are scary, it would be nice if it was like going to a horror movie. You know, people who like to go to horror movies, and they go to horror movies to scare themselves. It's so interesting that we get scared at a horror movie and find that entertaining, but if we scare ourselves by seeing how angry we are or how scared we get or how dependent we are, we don't enjoy it so much. It's like we'd never buy a ticket to our own horror pictures. You know, I mean, as I've gone through it, and I've been through it a lot, as I know both of you have, I find that life is filled with this kind of entertaining view of these different pictures, some of which are not pretty and some of which are very pretty, but if you're willing to look at them and really, really willing to look at them, they can be very entertaining. I'm amazed at how complex I am.
And I want to add, as you go through this tunnel of darkness and eventually see the light, because everything is subject to change, that all of a sudden life seems brighter. When you do experience joy, it feels more joyous, it feels lighter. And you get to experience your feelings more keenly. And it's a great experience. It's what being alive is.
Okay, so how do people do it? Now let's look at roles. Let's think about roles. Here's an experience that you two recommend. Imagine that you were at a party, and you're at a party, but you're invisible. This should be a wonderful gift. Haven't you wanted to be invisible? Ever since being a teenager, every teenager I could ever imagine wanted to be invisible and then go to a place where people talk about them. Can you imagine? Imagine this opportunity. Imagine being able to go and hear the gossip about you. What do they say about you? Well, imagine being somebody who goes to a party, and let's say it's a New Year's party, a holiday party, a Christmas party, a whatever kind of party there is, and you go to this party, and you're invisible, and they're going to talk about you. Somehow, somebody mentions your name, and now they're going to talk about you, and they're going to say, and everybody's going to say in one word what they think about you. If you were to take a piece of paper, my friends, and write down the different things that you think people would describe, how would people describe you in an adjective, one word? One word, what would they say? You're efficient, you're brave, you're pretty, and what do you think they'd say about you? So take out a piece of paper and imagine that you've got 10 different people now. It's not what you would say about yourself. It's what you think people see about you. What would they say? Perceptive. I'm thinking about myself. Thinking about what would people say if I went into a room. And what would they say about me? They would say, what about Armand? And then, well, he's perceptive, he's strong, he's lively, he's loving, he's overbearing. He's, I can think of the number of things. So I go to put together my list. He can fix anything. Put together your list. Now, here's what you're going to find out from this list. From this list, you're going to find a good definition of the roles that you have elected to play in life. And understanding the roles of who you are. You know, who are you? I mean, this doesn't mean who you really are. It's how people see you. That's the roles you play. Now, what's important about understanding the roles?
Well, if we're only seeing ourselves, sorry about that. In a particular role, but don't see any other possibilities, then it becomes two-dimensional. Then we don't have any ability to respond to the now more flexibly or with more flow. And so that's very
important.
Wait.
Respond to the now with more flexibility, more flow. We got to break that down.
Okay.
What does that mean?
Well, in life, every moment offers a new opportunity, a new window for us to respond. That's every now. And oftentimes, if we're only seeing ourselves in one fixated place, we only have one response to give. So what we're saying is that we want to be able to have more ability to have many different feelings, many different experiences, and whatever authentically comes up, allow ourselves to experience.
Shelley, I'm kind of losing. What happened to the 10 things that people said about us that defines our roles? How does this go from roles? We were talking about the roles that we discover about ourselves. Mm-hmm. What about those roles? Should we keep them? Should we not keep them? Should we throw them out? Do they get stale? Do we have to buy fresh ones in the morning?
Well, you were describing yourself, and what I noticed about your roles is that they were quite diverse. But if some people only came up with a few responses, then that might not be very helpful to them in their life. They'd only have a couple of ways of responding in the world. So, for example, the person who only is a giver but cannot allow themselves to in the world to take or to say no to people, that would be very inflexible, and that wouldn't be very healthy for them.
Imagine if you're an invisible person, right, and you're listening to somebody talk about you, and everybody says, oh, she's so nice. She's nice. She's nice. Oh, very nice person. Oh, so nice. Nice person. Nice. Boy. You know, then you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Because that means you're passive-aggressive. You got a lot of stuff hanging around somewhere, and that's all that people see about you. And you don't get a chance. And we know something about nice people. When nice people decide that they've had enough being nice, boy, they could
go postal.
They could go postal. They could be more postal than any regular person around.
That's right.
So I think that brings up a good point. If you have a role that defines you and there's unanimity around it, if people are unanimous about this role, oh, she's so good-looking, he's so good-looking, and that's it, then you're going to be fragile in that area. And this is an area that a therapist would look at and say, okay, let's examine that so that we could expand that so that you could be more than just your good looks, you know, more than just your sexuality, more than just your creativity.
The issue, Armand, is that people become afraid, and this happens to all of us, they become afraid of having their role stripped away from them. And, excuse me. And when their role is stripped away from them, then the question remains, like, who am I and what am I doing? And this becomes a space that they're not familiar with. There's a saying that people prefer the old familiar pain than to face the unknown, even if there's the possibility of joy, because we stick to what's familiar.
That's the definition of neurosis. They want to stay with the old pain versus giving up the possibility of new pain, but also the possibility of joy.
So, yeah, I would imagine that most people I've ever seen who have come to therapy, and I must have treated thousands by now, I would say basically anybody who comes in is saying the same thing. They're saying, I would like to work it out so that I could live my life by my original design, keeping everything going and just doing it better. So if I'm neurotic, I want to be just better neurotic. I want to be better at it. If I'm focused on getting money and achievements and beating up people and winning and getting to the top, I just want to be able to do it better. Most people, I'd say, would want to solidify their neurosis. You know, my neurosis has a little crack in it, Doc. Could you fix it for me? You know, give me a little crazy glue, which is terrific for your neurosis. And we give you crazy glue, and now I walk out and I feel much better. And they call that short-term therapy. This is what they call problem-solving therapy. We come in, you just help me get more solid. I'm going to have my neurosis back intact, and I could go back living just the way I was. I had this terrible relationship with a terrible guy who challenged me. Now I want to have relationships with totally submissive guys who don't challenge me at all. See, and this way I feel my neurosis is back intact. That's one level. Then we have this other level that Gladys talks about, where people come in and they say, I want to step out of my comfort zone because my comfort zone is killing me. I keep getting the same thing I'm ever getting, and I'm bored. I'm over and over again the same thing. And that's what I think you're talking about, Gladys, stepping out of the comfort zone to start making change so that you could be different in the way you behave and bring yourself around, okay?
I think also I see a lot of clients that come in and aren't happy with what they're feeling. They're very uncomfortable about what they're feeling. And quite honestly, most of the time I say to them that I don't do feelingectomies. I don't want to take people's feelings away. I want them to be able to have them and experience them and be able to move through them, because I believe that when you do that, you become much more flexible in life and can have more contentment, more integration and balance. What do you think, Gladys?
Well, that's quite a mouthful. Let me ask you something. What about when you're getting through life, and what are the things that a person could do? What are the kind of things? Well, give me some actual exercises that people could do. Right? What could they do to get change, to make themselves? I hate the word change because, you know, change sounds like. Mm-hmm. Of a dollar.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's usually worth nothing. But what are the things they could do? What are the kind of steps?
Well, the beginning process is awareness. We want to help people to just become more aware of what they're feeling. We believe that that awareness in and of itself is the beginning of the healing process. So, for example, you gave that exercise of what people were saying about, you know, the person at the party. Well, see what people feel about that and begin to have feelings about what they experienced in that moment as they heard who other people think that they are. And being able to be more comfortable with their feelings, all of them, is a really good beginning process.
I also want to suggest that look at a situation where you're experiencing an upset. You're upset. And usually there's something there that's making you upset. It's a delusion.
A delusion or an illusion? I like that.
Actually, it's an illusion because your fixed role is coming into play there. It's not letting you see it's not letting you see something clearly because you're used to seeing the world through a certain filter.
Okay, another thing. You could identify your internal resources and develop a reliance on self rather than trying to support the environment. Now, this is very important because I remember one of the wisest things that a good friend of mine, Peter Hogan, ever said. He said to me, Armand, he said, depression is always the result of a manipulation that fails. And I said, well, that's a pretty big statement. I said, you mean everybody who's depressed? I thought everybody who's depressed is feeling anger towards somebody on the outside, but they can't express it. He said, nah. He said, you want a really good definition of depression? It's a manipulation that failed. So I said, well, let me think about that. And there you are. There you have it. a manipulation that failed. How many times have you tried something, tried to do something, tried to make something work? Like you form a new relationship. If I give myself completely in this new relationship, I will be loved and I will get loved and I will be happy forever. And then you find out the relationship doesn't work. So the manipulation was the manipulation of your own life so that you could have a, you could change it. And it's a manipulation that fails. You try at a job and you try to, or let's go back to Feely. You know, good old Feely at the football game. The manipulation that fails. There I am. If I will kick my field goals, I will be loved and admired. Well, sometimes there's something bigger than you who's making you fail at your manipulation so that you could stop manipulating the environment. Instead of manipulating the environment, see what you could do about readjusting your inner self. That's the question here, and that's what both of you are saying. Both of you are saying we've got to find some way of being able to face and adjust the inner self as opposed to keep trying to change the world around us.
Keep trying to change people, other people. That's why we constantly blame other people. It's another manipulation.
Hey, on Sunday, December 4th, just to let you know, the essence of Gestalt, this whole idea of Gestalt therapy is going to be shown at the Gestalt Center for Psychotherapy and Training. And Gladys and another guest of ours, Nas, is going to be leading this one. So it's at the Gestalt Center for Psychotherapy and Training. This is Armand DeMille. This is very exciting about change. You know, one of the other things I know about change, stop changing people. Just stop asking people to change. If you want one of the great hints about life and how to make your next year be a better year, make yourself a deal that no matter what anybody shows you, you're not going to try to convince them to be different. Don't convince them to be different, but look at them instead and say, so this is who they are. So if you've got somebody who's nasty, let them be nasty. Let them be nasty. Say, this is a nasty person. If you've got somebody who is asexual, stop trying to get them to be sexual with you. Let them be asexual. If you've got somebody who is unhappy, let them be unhappy. And see what happens when you stop trying to change people. When you stop trying to change people, very often they change all on their own. Because sometimes people are just resisting changing because somebody's pulling on their coat strings a little too much. I want to thank you two wonderful guests for being with me. Once again, thank you for being on BAI.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gladys. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Roberta Atti and I have this incredible plan of bringing you the psychobiological history of emotions, the actual history of emotions. Where did they come from? Do you think they came from the birds? Well, you'll find out tomorrow. Be sure to tune in on Wednesday at 1 p.m. If you want a copy of today's program, you could call 212-757-4488, or you could get it off the Internet by going to the website, thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.